Thanks for tuning in on this Monday night. We've had floods all over the South, especially right up the road here in Nashville. It's just horrifying. Also in Chattanooga. We were pretty much spared the bulk of it. And as I heard Keith Olbermann say tonight, one of the worst things about being involved in a natural disaster is when there's another one going on that's even worse. And that's what's happened in Tennessee. I believe they've had between 15 and 20 people die as a result of these floods and this horrific weather. The rain, of course, these tremendous rainstorms are another example of the results of global warming, global climate change. And this is only going to continue. Regarding the bombing in Times Square, I believe it's another Glenn Beck follower, if not Beck himself, you know. Although, if that little video where the guy's taken off his shirt, and it didn't look like Beck, but that could have been somebody he sent out as a decoy. But so far, no word whether or not it was Beck or one of his followers that set that bomb off. I'm assuming that it was one of his followers. Because this is what Glenn Beck and these other right-wing freaks are always trying to instill in their listeners. So much hatred and suspicion and fear about the federal government. So much reference to Timothy McVeigh and bombing and militia types. This is what they push for. This is what they want. So we'll see. I would suggest to the FBI, as they're trying to find this guy, just go through Glenn Beck's emails. Maybe you'll find something, huh, guys? We're also going to touch on the Arizona accent law for school teachers. What the hell is going on in Arizona? Now, if you have a too thick of an accent, you can be fired as a school teacher? Jesus God, that means Haley Barber, the governor of Mississippi, could never go down there and talk. That means that Jeff Sessions and these other crackers from Alabama that talk like this could never get a job down there because of how to understand. Arizona, what is going on in Arizona? I mean, the state is becoming Crazyville. I mean, real Crazyville. We might touch on that, although there's not too much else to say about it. Susan in Squim, Washington. Mike, I've been wondering what you make of this business in Times Square over the weekend. After seeing the ineptitude of it all, I have a strong hunch that it's not Al-Qaeda at all, but is rather a teabagger. No proof, just a gut feeling. What cinched it for me was the fact that there was fertilizer there, but not the kind that could blow up. How much you want to bet that Bubba got it from the farm? Probably said, hey, fertilizer blows up. I'll just get some out of the barn. Just wondering. Susan and Squim. Well, I tend to agree with that. I think it's one of these militia nutballs, probably a teabagger, and certainly someone who thinks Glenn Beck is God. From Crooks and Liars, remember how the crowds at the 2008 Republican National Convention all chanted, drill, baby, drill, drill, baby, drill, led by people like Michael Steele and John McCain and Rudy Giuliani, and most of all by the hoe from Wasilla, Sarah Palin. And what Palin said in her debate with Joe Biden, this is what she said. The chant is drill, baby, drill. And that's what we hear all across this country in our rallies because people are so hungry for those domestic sources of energy to be tapped into. They know that even my own energy-producing state, we have billions of barrels of oil and hundreds of trillions of cubic feet of clean, green, natural gas, and we're building a nearly 40-billion natural gas pipeline, which is North America's largest and most expensive infrastructure project ever to flow those sources of energies into hungry markets. Yeah, but Barack Obama and Senator Biden, you've said no to everything in trying to find a domestic solution to the energy crisis that we're in. You even called drilling, which is a safe, environmentally friendly drilling offshore, you call it raping the outer continental shelf. Really, Sarah? Is that what? Is that what it is? Safe, environmentally friendly drilling? Notice I haven't heard anything from these teabag bastards, huh? Email from our education affairs correspondent, Kay Petrini. Hi, Mike. During your interview with Mike Papantonio on Friday's program, you mentioned a piece by CNN's Rick Sanchez. Rick Sanchez. In which he tried to present a balanced view of the oil disaster in the Gulf. You were incredulous that the media would try to present the fact that critical safety mechanisms on BP's oil rig were absent as one of two valid sides to the story. As part of our American history unit on McCarthyism, I'm showing my students the outstanding film Good Night and Good Luck. In one scene, Edward R. Murrow is being accused of editorializing in his piece about the unjustified severance of Lieutenant Colonel Milo Radulovic from the Air Force on the grounds that Radulovic's father had read a Serbian newspaper. Murrow says in the movie, "I've searched my conscience. I can't for the life of me find any justification for this. I simply cannot accept that there are on every story two equal and logical sides to an argument. Call it editorializing if you like." End quote. It's beyond unfortunate that today's talking heads seem to have rejected Murrow's wisdom in favor of employing the false equivalency formula to everything, including this clear-cut instance of criminal negligence that is destroying the Gulf of Mexico and beyond. Okay. Yeah, we've talked about this before. This attempt at this false equivalence that the corporate media is so intent on doing is just so infuriating, and it's so phony. And it's the only way that they have to protect themselves from an onslaught from these right-wing bastards that will then send emails to the board of directors and say, "Oh, your people are being left-wing." Andy in Seattle, Mike, I was listening to your interview with Mike Papantonio this morning while I was biking into work, and he made some great points as to the environmental disaster that, let's face it, will deal another death blow to the Gulf Coast. Still, I was shocked that the real reason for this and other disasters was glossed over. It's our driving, Mike, that's at the root of that explosion last month, and it's our desire for all those petroleum-based products that fuel those flames. Need we remind ourselves, it has been over 20 years, 20 damn years, since the Exxon Valdez, and what's changed? We still drive our cars and SUVs. Some of us pat ourselves on the head, thinking our hybrids are so much better for the environment, while forgetting the impact on the environment the hybrid has already cost the planet. We make up excuses for needing to drive. The kids got soccer practice. I want to live far away from my work. Public transit isn't reliable when the reality is we are too self-centered to think about anyone else other than ourselves. And I'm including conservatives and most liberals I know. How many listeners right now really think about the impact of their driving when we get behind the wheel? How much environmental damage have we helped cause? How many soldiers have died to put gas in your car? Yeah, Cheney had a lot to answer for, as does BP and the other oil companies. But since the Valdez, we have had 21 years to pull our heads out of our asses, and we need to start looking in the mirror. The biggest problem is staring right back at you. Andy in Seattle. All right, we have a break. We will return. We're going to talk some more about this disaster in unfolding in the Gulf of Mexico. If you haven't read Kathy's blog today, go to MikeMalloy.com and read it. It personalizes, it puts into the first person her experiences in that part of the country. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. One time around the early stars, feeling some more bad, I'll be home soon. I bet they have a lot of questions. Maybe some suggestions. And I bet they're gonna ask me about man's insanity. You got a real nice planet here, but you better watch your atmosphere. And you better clean your water up, or have none for your cup. You got a real nice planet here, but you better watch your atmosphere. And you better clean your water up, or have none for your also read Kathy's blog at Op-Ed News, opednews.com, or Huffington Post. AJ, the Music Factory, who used to call a lot, but for some reason hasn't lately. Hey, Mike, I had to get this off my chest. He wrote today, bless his heart. The Red Menace, that's the red state people. The Red Menace is calling the BP oil disaster Obama's Katrina. I think this begs a few questions. Is the menace admitting that the handling or not of the Katrina crisis by the government under George W. Bush was a display of criminal negligence? Else, why would it so enthusiastically be trying to pin the Katrina moniker on President Obama? Is this Obama's Katrina, or is it in fact Bush's oil spill? Who are the ones responsible for the deregulation of the oil industry? Who are the ones that gutted the various environmental laws which protected the people of the United States and their most precious resources? Who are the ones that had meetings with the oil industry so secret the American people to this day have no idea what deals may have been cut, although perhaps now they can begin to speculate? What are the connections between this catastrophe and Halliburton? How do the connections between the current administration and Halliburton compare and contrast to the connections between the Bush administration and Halliburton? How does the way the current administration handled its so-called Katrina in its first few days compare and contrast to how the former administration handled its real Katrina in the first few days? Who was it that in a stadium packed full of heat-stricken and shell-shocked victims declared with a titter, "This is working out very well for them"? Who was it that couldn't even remember the name of the crisis at hand, calling the hurricane Corinna? Accepting for a moment the premise of the psychotics, with a monster ready to engulf the Florida shores and continue right up the East Coast, with Louisiana fishers and shrimpers having to bid farewell, possibly forever, to a way of life in place for generations, with the United States having to stand in front of the world community like a child who has once again messed in his pants and the world once again forced to deal with it, with 11 families living in unimaginable anguish over their missing and feared dead relatives, with a vein at the bottom of the ocean having been savagely opened and now bleeding oil into our water at the rate of 100,000 barrels a day and with no definite end in sight, with one of the most fragile and important estuaries on the planet in epic scale jeopardy, with red state governors doing a full throttle reverse and now pleading for federal assistance, with southern states, ironically, one of the main food supplies of the red scourge, staring at the possibility of economic ruin, and with anyone of any political stripe wondering how this will affect the price of oil, with all of that, how is it that the GOP has no conscience which prevents him from politicizing this tragic moment in time that would at least put on hold their absolute maniacal desire to topple the president? During the first days and weeks of Katrina, in spite of everything we knew to be true about who was responsible, how often did we hear, "This is not a time for finger pointing"? How often did we hear, "This is not a time to play the blame game"? And finally, do we take these people to therapy, or do we just exile them? Signed, AJ, The Music Factory. Well, I have a third alternative, but I've been told I shouldn't talk about shooting people as often as I do, especially these right-wing vermin. Alabama Attorney General Troy King said he has told representatives of BP that they should stop circulating settlement agreements among coastal Alabamians. The agreements, the Attorney General said, essentially require that people give up the right to sue in exchange for an immediate payment of up to $5,000. The Attorney General said BP's efforts were particularly strong in Bayou La Batre. The Attorney General said he is prohibited from giving legal advice to private citizens, but he added that, quote, people need to proceed with caution and understand the ramifications before signing something like that, end quote. A spokesman for BP said the waiver agreement or a requirement had been stripped out and that ones already signed would not be enforced. Isn't that just typically corporate predatory capitalism? I mean, isn't that, let's go around and get the dumbass fishermen and shrimpers to sign an agreement where they'll sign over all their legal rights for $5,000. Those people are so stupid. What's $5,000 to those people? Oh, my God, that's a lot of money. Let's see how dumb they really are. You filthy bastards. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Show. Talk radio matters here.
It is 25 before the hour. Mike from Connecticut writes, Mike, I was thinking today about the fact that liberals always get stuck dealing with the short-sightedness and destruction of the Republicans. Before the Iraq War, we were screaming and protesting only to be totally ignored. Now we have thousands of dead bodies, billions of wasted dollars, and the increased growth of hatred for us in the Middle East. Environmentalists were screaming about offshore drilling while the morons with their leader Sarah Palin were chanting, drill, baby, drill. We were mocked for being against increasing our oil production. Where are they now? It's always the liberals who are ignored that get stuck with cleaning up the mess. And so it goes. Mike from Connecticut. Dick Cheney. From the Wall Street Journal, quote, the oil well spewing crude into the Gulf of Mexico didn't have a remote control shutoff switch used in two other major oil producing nations as last resort protection against underwater spills. The lack of the device, called an acoustic switch, could amplify concerns over the environmental impact of offshore drilling after the explosion and sinking of the Deepwater Horizon rig last week. Regulators in two major oil-producing countries, Norway and Brazil, in effect require them. Norway has had acoustic triggers on almost every offshore rig since 1993. The U.S. considered requiring a remote control shutoff mechanism several years ago, but drilling companies questioned its cost and effectiveness, according to the agency overseeing offshore drilling. The agency, the Interior Department's Minerals Management Service, says it decided the remote device wasn't needed because rigs had other backup plans to cut off a well. The Journal's report doesn't come out and say this, but the environmental lawyer Mike Papantonio, who we had on this program the other night, said that it was Cheney's Energy Task Force that decided the switches, which cost half a mil each, were too much of a burden on the industry. So who are you going to believe, huh? Dick Cheney is the toxin, the poison that just keeps on giving. Have you noticed that? Everything that this filthy, degenerate man has ever touched has turned out to be full of death, full of rot, full of rats and roaches. And now his offspring is doing the same thing. Dick Cheney. I found this to be very, very interesting. It was from MediaMatters.org, and it is a summary of Fox Channel's advocacy of drilling in the Gulf. And as Media Matters says, in the wake of the catastrophic oil spill currently occurring in the Gulf of Mexico, Media Matters reviews Fox News' fervent advocacy for offshore drilling. Its activism has included promoting Sarah Palin's drill baby drill mantra and pushing the myths suggesting that drilling is environmentally safe. Palin, on the April 14th edition of On the Record, host Greta Van Susteren aired footage of Fox News contributor Sarah Palin giving a speech at a Tea Party event in which she repeated the drill baby drill mantra she first voiced during the 2008 presidential campaign, saying, quote, "We can pave the way for proven conventional sources of energy, resource development with nuclear and clean coal technology, and on offshore drilling. Because remember, the energy in America is security for America. So yeah, let's drill baby drill, not stall baby stall." Sean Hannity. On the April 1st edition of his show, Sean Hannity said, quote, "We've got the oil reserves in Alaska. We've got them off the coast of Florida. We've got them off the coast in California. We've got them in the Gulf. We know where the oil is. We don't need to explore. We need to drill, baby, drill. Drilling would be conducted in an environmentally sensitive manner." The crazy bastard Glenn Beck said on the September 2nd edition of his CNN headline news show, back when he was working there, Glenn Beck said, quote, "I got news for the greenies. If you really cared about the environment, you would let us drill for our own oil. It appears to me that the oil companies are doing a better job protecting the ocean and the fishes and the Gulf of Mexico than the local, state, and federal government are having at protecting people in our cities." What the hell does that mean? On the July 14th edition of his CNN headline show, Beck noted President, at the time, President Bush's removal of, quote, "the executive ban on offshore drilling," end quote, adding, "Welcome to the party, George. This is a ban that was as antiquated as it is idiotic. Unfortunately, no more oil is going to flow from the Atlantic, at least until Congress does the same thing and lifts the ban there as well," end quote. On June 18th, 2008, Beck said that, quote, "President Bush gave a speech this afternoon urging Congress to pass legislation lifting the congressional ban on safe, environmentally friendly offshore oil drilling, blah, 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 blah. Anybody with a car and a brain has been screaming about that for a long time." Beck also called the lifting of the ban, quote, "so logical the politicians have trouble even understanding it," end quote. From the May 12, 2008 edition of his show, Beck said, quote, "We have to ramp up domestic offshore drilling, even off the coast of billionaire vacation spots like South Florida, California, and my favorite, Cape Cod. So tonight, America, here's what you need to know. Until we get a president and Congress with vision, or really, I'll just settle for one with a clue, we need a temporary energy solution. Aggressive drilling is one of them." It just goes on and on. It just goes on and on. Newt Gingrich talking about it. This crazy little bastard, Bill Kristol, talking about it. Neil Cavuto. O'Reilly. What's his name? Mike Huckabee advocating offshore drilling. Greg Jarrett. He's the co-reader of Fox News Happening Now. It just goes on and on. So I just wonder if the bobbleheads who still watch the Fox channel, if they are aware that the people who have been feeding this nonsense to them for a couple of years now, that, first of all, that offshore drilling is environmentally safe. It is not. It never is. Onshore drilling is not environmentally safe. None of it is. There's no such thing as clean coal. nuclear reactors are about as dangerous as anything human beings have ever developed. I just wonder if the morons who watch Fox News Channel, if they understand how these people hate the United States, hate life, hate everything. The LA Times is reporting that investigators looking into the causes of the oil spill are examining the role of Halliburton, the giant energy services company that was responsible for cementing the deepwater drill hole, as well as the possible failure of equipment leased to British Petroleum by Halliburton. Two members of Congress, Waxman and Stupak, called on Halliburton last Friday to provide all documents relating to, quote, the possibility or risk of an explosion or blowout at the Deepwater Horizon rig and the status, adequacy, quality, monitoring, and inspection of the cementing work, end quote, by May 7th. What's today, May 3rd? Halliburton Chief Executive David Lesar is scheduled to testify before Waxman's Energy and Commerce Committee on May 12th, along with top executives from BP. Halliburton has been accused of performing a poor cement job in the case of a major blowout in the Timor Sea off Australia last August. An investigation is underway there. Halliburton is another one. Anything that Dick Cheney touches is poisonous, is full of death, is full of destruction. How many American soldiers died in Iraq because Halliburton was such a filthy, filthy company that didn't give a tinker's damn about providing soldiers in that godforsaken country with the products and services that Halliburton had contracted to deliver and just didn't. What a bunch of bastards. What a bunch of evil bastards. We'll be back after the break.
Ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It is 10 minutes before the hour. Matt in East Jordan, Michigan writes, the letter you just read rightly mentioned the criminal Dick Cheney and the criminal empire called Halliburton. However, if Barack Obama had demanded accountability from the previous administration instead of looking forward, Cheney would be imprisoned and Halliburton would have been under a federal microscope. It's quite likely that demanding accountability from the Bush crime family would have prevented this unfolding catastrophe. Barack Obama isn't George Bush, but he certainly doesn't deserve a free pass here. And who cares if he's funnier than Jay Leno? Yeah. Yeah, Obama had, I'm not going to dwell on this because I think the whole White House press corps dinner thing is insanity. It's like people inside a madhouse sitting around making jokes. I don't know. I don't care for it. But when Obama said that the, who's that singing group? The Jonas Brothers. that his daughters really were fans of the Jonas Brothers, but if the Jonas Brothers ever responded to his daughters or tried to take his daughters out, Obama said, I have two words, predator drone. Now, that's not funny. I don't think it's funny. Predator drones have killed God knows how many people. I don't see the humor in this nonsense. There is a representative named Gene Taylor. He's from Mississippi. And is he a Democrat? He might be a Democrat. I don't know. I'll have to check it. He's from Mississippi, and he suggested over the weekend that people shouldn't be scared about the Gulf Coast oil spill. And in justifying his claim, he compared the massive oil slick to, quote, chocolate milk. On Saturday, Taylor flew over the oil spill in a Coast Guard plane and at first glance declared that the site was, quote, not as bad, end quote, as he expected it to be. And the Sun Herald newspaper reports reported that. After observing the oil spill from 1,000 feet, Taylor said in an interview with Biloxi's WLOX-TV that what many feel is an environmental and economic catastrophe is not Katrina or Armageddon. And he added that the chocolate milk-looking spill is beginning to break up naturally. Democrat, huh? All righty. Yeah, we should get him a straw and ask him if he wants to take a sip. Crazy bastards. I swear to God. I don't know what to say about this disaster. This is an undersea gusher. And it continues to blow oil into the Gulf out of control. It also has the potential, if they being BP or engineers or explosive specialists or the very, very bright people who allow this to happen to begin with, if this gusher is not stopped and stop soon, it has the potential to pollute just about every sea on Earth. And where is Pat Robertson? I would have expected him to come out and blame this on the queers. We've had all sorts of disasters here. Where's Pat? Is he sick?
I don't know, but Pat Robertson and Falwell's dead, but he ought to be channeling him. You've got, the water main break in Boston. And the floods in Tennessee,
right.
And the oil spill in the Gulf,
right.
and the bomb scare in New York. I mean, it's Armageddon.
It's the fault of the gays.
I would think the rapture ready women would be getting the boob jobs and going to the hairdresser to meet Jesus.
Yeah, here we go again, right? If you ever go to some of these websites and see what these people talk about.
I want to look good from a savior.
Yeah, I do.
Get my nails done.
Get my hair fixed. I'm going to rise up naked.
I'm going to that tanning booth. Yeah, I ain't got no clothes. I'm going to go to that tanning booth tomorrow. You know, no bikini.
So I just wonder, is Pat Robertson dead? Did he die in the past couple of days and they're just waiting for him to rise on the third day? I would have expected Pat Robertson to be out at this point blaming gay folk for all of this stuff. All right, we have a missive from Prairie 2 and also a report card from our education correspondent, Kay Petrini, coming up, and your phone calls when we come back. So do stick around for that. Again, I don't know what to say about the there's nothing. I feel very inadequate even trying to talk about this horror that's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. There are a number of ways to talk about it, and as Mike Papantonio pointed out on this program on Friday night, I have yet to hear any corporate media spokesperson, up to and including my good friend Rachel Maddow and somebody I really admire, Keith Olbermann, get deeply into the fact that it's not about dead turtles and ecological damage. It's about the fact that the Bush administration and corporate America not only allowed this to happen, but will continue to do this. The fault is with corporate America. And I just wonder if anybody is going to bring that up. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. Sand writes in, the teabaggers truly believe that any and all oil drilled in this country or offshore this country will of course be used for their benefit. They are clueless to the fact that it all goes on the world market to be bid on. Man, they are dummies. And Fox prefers they stay that way. Yeah, indeed. Hey, welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. I'm Mike Malloy. We're going to open up the phones now. The number here is 877-996-2556 if you would like to call in and participate. Prairie 2 writes in today. Subject line, the invisible hand on your throat. China's central bank surprised everybody over the May Day holiday weekend by announcing another increase in capital requirements for banks. That's the third time this year. This drastically cuts lending and is being seen as a move to control domestic inflation in advance of allowing the yuan, their money, to rise against the U.S. dollar. This would produce a tariff-like increase on things the U.S. imports from China. Well, in theory, giving exports to China from all its trading partners a boost. Don't plan on an increase in U.S. exports to China since their economy is tightly controlled. The invisible hand that the neocons claim regulates the market for all things is in China, an iron fist. China has a China first policy. America has a Wall Street first policy. The Wall Street bankers' version of the iron fist is to move massive amounts of money around, overwhelming the little guy. China isn't shy about doing this either, since they have a $2.5 trillion surplus to work with, but they also back up their financial moves with strict controls or even blunt force to get what they want done. Sort of like Dick Cheney's Iraq oil policy. Speaking of oil, Wall Street is planning to drive oil back up to $100 a barrel, courtesy of the current disaster. So far, two rigs have had to shut down because of the growing threat of spreading oil. They're also trying to hype the prospect that drilling might actually be regulated. The truth is that even if there is a glut of oil and the price should go back to pre-Dick Cheney levels, until the Wall Street banks are brought under control, that isn't likely. The FDIC broke new ground Friday with the failure of three large banks in Puerto Rico, the first since the SNL debacle of the elder Bush's regime. These three banks closing alone will cost us $5.28 billion. They also closed a bank in Everett, Washington at a cost of $1.3 billion, and another in Port Huron, Michigan for a mere $615 million. A state charter bank in Creve Coeur, Missouri cost just chicken feed, $51 million. The total bill for last Friday's bank closings alone was $7.5 billion. The state of Ohio is trying to slash $8 billion from its budget by cutting workers' pay by 10 days a year. This is enough to push many of them out of the middle class and does nothing for the economy but make things worse. The invisible hand has us by the throat. Prairie2.com. And I think at the bottom of this hour, we will share with you a report card from Kay Petrini. That's about a week old now, but it's still relevant. What else do we have here? I'm just totally overwhelmed and totally freaked out, seriously, by this disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, especially the way it was initially reported by BP.
Beyond Petroleum.
Little flowers. Yeah, little green things. The way it was reported by BP, the way it was reported by the authorities, whoever they are, and, you know, and if you step back from that, the fact that most people are told in this country by the usual predatory capitalist organs that there's nothing to worry about. Oh, this can't happen. BP assured whoever it was they were supposed to assure that such an event as the one unfolding now just couldn't happen. It was virtually impossible. And it just got me so freaked out. I mean, it really does. This is... it's just a monumental disaster. It's a catastrophe. It's horrifying. And the part that is really, really, really disgusting here is the fact that when, just like the Exxon Valdez event in Alaska, eventually this story fades from the public consciousness. Eventually, corporate media stops telling the stories about this this tragedy. And we just wait for the next one. I don't know. It's getting harder and harder and harder to, for me anyway, to deal with this stuff. I'm sure you too, right? Mark is in Louisville, Kentucky, listening on Sirius. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Wow, that was a heck of an echo.
Oh, there is an echo?
Yeah, I hear an echo on my end.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think I can deal with it.
Okay.
Doesn't it seem like there's like a perfect storm of events right now? You got this giant disaster in the Gulf that has probably a far-reaching effects that we probably can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Nashville, Tennessee is underwater. We've got two wars failed occupations going on.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a financial crisis, which even that probably has far-reaching effects that we will never see or understand. Don't you get the impression that maybe the universe is trying to tell us something? I know you're not a religious man, but don't you get a feeling like that that something needs to happen.
Well, yeah, I get that feeling. That is the human species. The human species has been acting so irresponsibly for so long that we've almost come to think that we're entitled to go, get in a chunk of plastic and steel and fill it full of fossil fuel and go 70 miles an hour to get from point A to point B. We've convinced ourselves that certain things are our rights. I think religion has been instrumental in doing this. The Judeo-Christian book in Genesis, where God commands Adam to have a dominion over everything on earth, which is insanity. It's arrogant insanity. Any God that would say that to its little one of its creations is a God that's sick in the head. So what we have is a situation where the arrogance of all of us has gotten to the point where we really do think that we need a 2,500 square foot house, that we've got to have two or three vehicles, that we have to, I mean, it just goes on and on. I think that's where the message is coming from. As far as a message from the universe, now I understand what you mean, but I think what's happening is a principle in physics. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And I think what has happened here, we have punched so many holes into the environment and into our situation that it's starting to fight back. It's just starting. I mean, we're getting the. I don't mean fighting back in the anthropomorphic
we're
sense.
We're reaping the rewards.
Well, there you
the
go. There you
yeah.
go. It's just a natural reaction, by nature, by the natural world. What would we expect? Thanks, Mark. I got a break here. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Russ says, well, I agree that the caller probably is an ass blank. What he said is true. They're constructing three giant domes that they hope to install by the end of the week that will cap the leaks. I doubt it will work, but that's what they're trying. Yeah, thanks, Russ. I knew about that. I didn't know what you meant, Kath. Yeah, a dome over this thing. Why has it taken as long as it has taken? I just think that if you are going to literally punch a hole into the seabed and bring up oil with a capacity to destroy everything it touches, if it touches anything in a natural environment, whether it is refined or not refined. And you do this without a system of fail-safe devices, then you are an unconscionable criminal. And I think every oil company, every mining company, every natural gas company, every nuclear power plant that operates without, if it's possible, backup after backup after backup, is a filthy, criminal, murderous enterprise. And they will either kill people, they will kill the environment, they will kill life on Earth. I'm just getting so sick of this. I'm getting so sick of it. I'm sick of these filthy goddamn Republicans. I'm sick of the corporate, predatory corporate practices. I'm sick of it. And it's just going to continue until we make it stop. I mean that. I don't. Yeah, you know, I'm kind of lost. I'm lost for words. I keep coming back to that. I'm lost for words. I don't know anything that I were to say, as far as I'm concerned, anything that I would say about this disaster, this catastrophe, would be trite. It would be, filled with clotted emotion, because I can't seem to get my mind straight about this issue. I can't come up with a thread of thought, you know, to pursue, to say, okay, A, B, C, D regarding this. It's just a mass of swirling images, and fear and rage. I mean, what, you take a look at what has happened. I mean, just take a chunk of recent history. Start about 1991 with the first invasion of Iraq. So, of what, 19 years? Just take a look at that period of time. It seems like the destruction of everything has been accelerated. And all of it is being carried out by the same sons of bitches. I'm sorry for the language. I'm just furious. The same gang. Over and over and over again, whether it's predatory capitalism on Wall Street, predatory capitalism in the energy business, predatory capitalism in the food industry, predatory capitalism, I don't care where it is. It just keeps going on and going on and going on to the point where, you know, to sit here and talk about this over and over again. And then you watch these half-witted teabaggers running around with this monstrous idiot from Wasilla going, drill, baby, drill. And the baggers say, well, where's his birth certificate? I mean, Jesus God, it's almost like being in a madhouse. Not almost, it really is. What the hell has happened? So it is difficult for me to develop any linear thought here. It's getting harder and harder. You better take over the program, Kathy.
I just had a caller call in that wanted us, you to know that Rachel Maddow spent the last few minutes of her program blasting the corporate greed that allowed such a disaster to happen. So there has been at least one person with some prime time exposure to place the blame where it's due.
Good. Good for Rachel. If anybody in corporate media were going to do it, it would be her. No offense to Keith Olbermann. At all, but if anybody were going to do it, it would be Rachel. Bless her heart. I think it's easier for people who work. It's almost easier for people who work in a more structured environment, corporate media, like Olbermann, like Rachel, to maintain some kind of point A to point B to C to D. Type of linear thought. It's very difficult for me to do that. I just get so caught up in the crazed emotions about all this stuff that I start to melt. You know what I'm saying? And I don't have an executive producer, well, Kathy, but I mean, I'll have somebody to kick my ass and say, stop indulging, stop the self-indulgence, do your program. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll try to do the program. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I fall off my chair and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
listen to right-wing radio, here's Mike Malloy.
Here indeed, and thanks to the people in the video chat room. I'm just too slow to do that. I log in and I'm sitting there trying to type something. And sorry. All right, it is time for another report card from Kate Pastrini, our education affairs correspondent, who teaches school in San Francisco. The subject line of this report card is "What kind of socialism?" Hi, Mike. Wanted to write you about my lesson plan the other day before I forget about it. In U.S. history, we are covering the beginning of the Cold War. One of the activities I have the students do each year focuses on a series of cartoons representing capitalism and socialism as competing ideologies. In the past, I've approached this by breaking it down into economic systems, capitalism slash socialism, and political systems, communism slash democracy. But this year, because of the teabaggers calling the president a communist, fascist, socialist, I decided to go one step further. On the board, I drew three columns and labeled them communist socialism, national socialism, and democratic socialism. When I asked the students what kind of government prevailed in the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany, they were correctly able to identify both and label them as totalitarian. Thankfully, most of the kids remember seeing the film Europa, Europa, which does a spectacular job of showing the commonalities and differences between communism and fascism. Next, we went on to democratic socialism. When I asked what kind of government this name implies, I got a lot of eye-rolling and more than a couple, duh. The kids immediately got that democratic socialism implies a small d democratic form of government. Most were also aware that this is the predominant form of government in Europe. To make sure they understood the concept and to bring it closer to home, I asked, what would you do if your smoke alarm went off in the middle of the night and you could see flames down the hallway? Students. Duh, I'd call 911. Me, and who would come? Students. The fire department. Me, who pays for the fire department? Students. The government. Me, who funds the government? Students. We do. Me, how? Students, with our taxes. We then had a similar exchange concerning the college application process, focusing on the fact that students will be using stamps purchased from the government-run post office and that a government employee called a mail carrier will deliver those applications and hopefully letters of acceptance. By the end of this lesson, students were able to grasp that democratic socialism is really not such a scary thing because, after all, they experience it in some form every single day. The key was to distinguish totalitarian socialism from the democratic form and to point out that certain sectors of the American so-called free market have been socialized as well and work just fine, thank you very much. Obviously, I don't know how well today's lesson will stick with my students, but one thing is for sure. No one will be able to throw the term socialist around in front of them without having them ask, what kind of socialism are you talking about? So, teabaggers, beware. I know a few kids who could easily make you look like total fools. And then again, you don't really need any help in that department. K.
Teach your children well, 'cause their father's hell did slowly go by. And see them on your
Kate Petrini is a school teacher in San Francisco and writes an occasional blog or letter to us. You can see her stuff at what is it? What is her blog? What is her blog site? Oh no, I'll have it here in a second. I'm sorry, Kay. It'll come in just a second. You can go to her blog site though and see all of these. Maybe you already have it written down, right? Like I should. Rick is in San Rochelle, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Michael. That's San Rochelle, California.
San Rochelle. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I had a comment, and I wanted to plug my climate change website. you know, these people who are advocating drilling in the Anwar in Alaska and the Arctic Sea. Well, what would be happening right now if we had a gusher in the winter under the ice?
Yeah, really. Yeah.
And I wanted to let you know about my, I have a website that is focused largely on exposing the disinformation campaign about global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And all the phony think tanks and the oil companies and the phony scientists and everything.
Right.
And the name of it is Energy Solutions We Can Believe In. And I think people will find it very educational and interesting. I have, it's supposed to be a blog, but I really have two articles, basically, which are very long.
Mm-hmm.
The one on climate change and disinformation is about 90 pages as far as the...
Good Lord. Know.
So I just wanted to, I think it's a good resource, and it leads people to other good websites, too.
And the focal point of your site is to what?
To expose the disinformation propaganda campaign that the fossil fuel industry is fooling Americans with on global warming.
I see. In other words, the so-called counter argument that such a thing is not happening.
Yeah, which is
hog's not.
Well, I also would highly recommend a book called Climate Cover-Up by James Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how you pronounce his last name, Hoggan.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the people from the website called DeSmog Blog.
Okay, DeSmog Blog?
DeSmog Blog, yeah.
All right, what's
if people go to my website, they'll find all kinds of good websites on climate change, real ones.
What is it?
Real scientists.
What is it again, Rick?
Energy Solutions We Can Believe In at blogspot.com.
Dot blogspot.
If you just plug in the name into a search, it'll come right up.
Okay, great. All right, thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
All right, man, take it easy. Thanks for checking in. Marge? Marge is calling from the hospital. I understand it's your birthday again tomorrow, is that right?
Yeah.
Hey, Marge, how you feeling?
Well... I'm still feeling. I guess that's a step in the right direction.
Right, as long as you're feeling.
But I don't know what the hell they're doing to me.
You don't?
No, I was kind of sort of explaining that to Kathy. I didn't want to go into all that. But anyway.
Did they tell you what they're doing? Did they say open wide or here, let's put this needle in or?
Well, you know, it seemed to have a line of doctors, and I had some kind of AFib or whatever that was going towards pneumonia. And I had all these people asking me how I was breathing, how I was feeling, all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't tell me why they wanted to know. And then all of a sudden I found out. And they're great at coming in and listening a little bit, and so I'll be back. But they don't say too much. So I got to...
Uh-oh. Are the police coming in to get you?
Yeah.
Oh, no. You want me to put you on hold?
Could you?
Yeah, I'll put you on hold. We'll come back in a couple of minutes and see how you're doing, Marge. They're coming in with needles and bedpans. She doesn't mind the needles. Charles is in L.A. listening to KTLK.
Yes, yes. Guess where Dick Cheney is right now?
I don't know.
He's in Saudi Arabia. That's right. They gave him a big official welcome as if he's still the vice president.
Oh, my God.
But his dirty fingers are around all of this. You know, he, like you were talking about before, he's the one that said that acoustic shutoff valve wasn't necessary.
Right, right.
You know, and had that valve been, that system been put in place, we wouldn't be talking about this big oil spill today.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Halliburton. They're working on it just hours before the explosion. And then last year, in November last year, the same thing when Halliburton was working on a rig and they had a big explosion. Millions of gallons of oil went off the coast of Australia. That was
right.
In November.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the same people involved with this. I'd like to see Cheney be forced to come before Congress and testify under oath about his participation in all this.
Yeah, well, he's avoided that all during the 8 years that he and... his puppet were destroying the country, destroying the economy. Cheney refused subpoena after subpoena and cited separation of powers restrictions. Now that he's a private citizen, I don't see how they could force him. They could issue a citation, and if he didn't show up, charge him with contempt of Congress. But you know how that would play with the crazy people in this country. And you also know that Democrats, for the most part, when it concerns issues like this, Democrats in Congress are cowards.
Well, they need to stand up. And a lot of those people directly affected by this oil spill, a lot of them probably vote Republican.
Oh, yeah.
But they're going to be the ones hit hardest. So they might be, they may also want to hear what Cheney has to say about this. This is really Cheney's oil spill.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There is no doubt about that. No doubt whatsoever. And he'll get away with it. And as he got away with everything, he got away with initiating two illegal wars. He is really a ghoulish, nasty person who hangs out with the dead. That's what he likes to do. Thanks, Charles. I appreciate your call. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Say no, please don't get me wrong. If it's free in the Iraqi people, you're after them. Why have we waited so long? Why didn't we sort this out last time? Was he less evil then than he is now? The stock market holds the answer.
Another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. I found it. It's kaysreportcard.com. K-A-Y-S. Kaysreportcard.com. That was real hard, wasn't it, Mike? It is 10 before the hour. To Michael, who's in Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Just as frustrated as you are, I get to the point where I feel like I can't think in linear ways when I, you know, you end up in a conundrum, mental conundrum when there is so much obvious evil compounding on itself and you feel just forced into this corner.
Yeah, it's true. And let me just qualify something. You know, I've said before in this program, I don't believe in a definable inherent evil as some kind of an entity that's been introduced by religion. But I agree with you. Behavior can have evil, nasty-ass results. And I think that's what we're experiencing. That's what we've been experiencing for a long time, the behavior of the Republican leadership, in some instances the Democratic leadership. It's the behavior that generates these horrible results or reactions. And corporate behavior is just straight from hell. I mean, it's unbelievably evil.
Absolutely. I think anything we can do to react to it, I think, is good. I mean, you at least get people to think about it and to consider, you know, the ramifications of what's going on across the nation and across the world. And, you know, people need to write letters. They need to, you know, get on the phone and call radio shows and say, you know, this is how I feel. And you know, we're not just a little minority of people. You know, the teabaggers are not the majority, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not, although they make an awful lot of noise as if they were. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for checking in. You know, I continue to have people email me emails that don't make it on the program, or I have phone calls with people I know, and usually in the vein that I'm talking about, the point is, you know, you need to stop talking about the symptoms, Mike. Not because you have a radio program, but because, you know, just because you're a person, there's no point in our talking about this stuff. No point whatsoever talking about these, what are really peripheral issues. A gushing oil explosion in the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico is a direct result of how we live. And by we, I mean the entire industrialized world, you know, melting ice caps and the change in ocean currents is a direct result of how we live. Air that we can't breathe is a direct result. food that if we eat is going to make us sick is a direct result. I mean, all of this stuff. All of this stuff. And to focus on these little peaks that stick up through the madness, whether it's an oil spill in Alaska or a hole punched in the bottom of the ocean in the Gulf of Mexico, or murdering people with drone aircraft in Afghanistan, or overthrowing governments in the Middle East, you know, whatever it is, to focus on those peaks is to be distracted, to be completely distracted. Molly goes to a kid's yoga class once a week, and I drop her off. She has an hour. And then either I or Kathy will pick her up. I picked her up today. Got into the building where she has her yoga class with all these other little kids. And it's I think it's a wonderful idea. And I'm sitting there in a little waiting area. And on the table they have these cards. Sayings of and by and about the Buddha. And some of these sayings come from truth seekers. Some of them come from monks and people who follow the Buddhist thought. And I'm sitting there reading those things today. And, of course, every single one made perfect sense. And I pick Molly up, and we get in the car, and we start the car. And I can't even start the car now without thinking about what I'm doing. You know, here you go again, Mike. You're turning on the key. You're going to drive 6 miles to get you and Molly home. You're going to spew this crap out of the back of your car all the way home. You're going to do this enough times until you're going to have to go fill up the gas tank again and do it again and again. And it's driving me crazy. I don't know how to reconcile this stuff. It's not the disasters. It's what's driving us to get ourselves in the position where the disasters occur. That is maddening. And it's becoming harder and harder for me, maybe it is for you too, to focus on these little peaks, these little needle points that stick up through the fabric and keep reminding us, you're screwing up, you're screwing up, you're screwing up. It's getting harder and harder to focus on that. And it's becoming impossible not to focus on the essential problem. And that is the way we're living, what we're all doing, what we have done, and whether or not we are going to pull back and stop it. And the difference between the two is what's making me crazy, literally crazy. I don't know. You know, I've said this before, and don't send me emails because I'm just blowing smoke, but it makes me feel like it's time for me to get the hell out of this business, because then I can anesthetize myself again. See, if you're not thinking about this garbage every day, you can anesthetize yourself. You can pretend it's not true, or you can refocus, or you can set it aside, or whatever. I guess. I mean, I don't know. But it's getting so difficult. Is it for you? I don't know anymore. Is it for you getting difficult to not focus on the essential problem? And that is the way we live. Oh, Christ. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. I want to quote you a little bit here. Paul Noel is a software engineer. He's a contractor for the U.S. Army at Redstone Arsenal, Alabama. He is founding member of the New Energy Congress. He writes, the original estimate was about 5,000 gallons of oil a day spilling into the ocean. Now they're saying 200,000 gallons a day. That's over 1 million gallons of crude oil a week. I'm an engineer with 25 years of experience. I've worked on some big projects with big machines. Maybe that's why this mess is so clear to me. First, the BP platform was drilling for what they call deep oil. They go out where the ocean is about 5,000 feet deep and drill another 30,000 feet into the crust of the earth. This is right on the edge of what human technology can do. Well, this time they hit a pocket of oil at such high pressure that it burst all of their safety valves all the way up to the drilling rig and then caused the rig to explode and sink. Take a moment to grasp the import of that. The pressure behind this oil is so high that it destroyed the maximum effort of human science to contain it. When the rig sank, it flipped over and landed on top of the drill hole some 5,000 feet under the ocean. Now they've got a hole in the ocean floor 5,000 feet down with a wrecked oil drilling rig sitting on top of it spewing 200,000 gallons of oil a day into the ocean. Take a moment and consider that, will you? First, they have to get the oil rig off the hole in order to get at it, in order to try to cap it. Do you know the level of effort it will take to move that wrecked oil rig sitting under 5,000 feet of water? That operation alone could take years and hundreds of millions of dollars to accomplish. Then, how do you cap that hole in the muddy ocean floor? There just is no way. No way. The only piece of human technology that might address this is a nuclear bomb. I'm not kidding. If they put a nuke down there, in the right spot, it might seal up the hole. Nothing short of that will work. If we can't cap that hole, the oil is going to destroy the oceans of the world. It only takes 1 quart of motor oil to make 250,000 gallons of ocean water toxic to wildlife. Are you starting to get the magnitude of this? We're so used to our politicians creating false crises to forward their criminal agendas that we aren't recognizing that we're staring straight into possibly the greatest disaster mankind will ever see. Imagine what happens if that oil keeps flowing until it destroys all life in the oceans of this planet. Who knows how big of a reservoir of oil is down there? Not to mention that the oceans are critical to maintaining the proper oxygen level in the atmosphere for human life. Now, that was not written by Paul Noel. That was written by somebody else. Response by Paul Noel. He's the engineer. I really do think that the situation is getting further and further out of hand. By yesterday morning, the nature of the crude had changed, indicating that the spill was collapsing the rock structures. How much, I cannot say. If it is collapsing the rock structures, the least that can be said is that the rock is fragmenting and blowing up the tube with the oil. With that going on, you have a high-pressure abrasive sandblaster working on the kinks in the pipe, eroding it, causing the very real risk of increasing the leaks. More than that is a very real risk of causing the casing to become unstable and literally blowing it up the well, bringing the hole to totally open condition. Another risk arises because, according to reports, the crew was cementing the exterior of the casing when this happened. As a result, the well, if this was not properly completed, could begin to blow outside the casing. Another possible scenario is a seafloor collapse. If that happens, Katie, bar the door. I do not see any good possibilities from humans further fracturing the rock, particularly at higher levels. That is the cap rock that is holding the deposit together. I do see a possible use of explosives for favorable outcome. If a properly sized charge were applied in a shaped fashion around the drill pipe at some distance from it, say 5 feet or so, it is entirely possible that an explosive charge could pinch the pipe off similar to a hydraulic clamp. A nuclear detonation, though, carries the real risk of giving us the full doomsday scenario on this well. I just don't like doing that. There's no coming back from the brink when you do that one. If it works, which I see as unlikely, great. If it doesn't work, there is now maybe a hole a quarter mile across leaking oil. The BP people are not talking, but this well is into a deposit that easily could top 500,000 barrels production per day for 10 or 15 years. Letting that all go in one blast seems more than foolish. The deposit is one I've known about since 1988. The oil deposit is very big. The central pressure in the deposit is 165 to 170,000 pounds per square inch. It contains so much hydrocarbon that you simply cannot imagine it. In published reports, BP estimated a blowout could reach nearly 200,000 barrels per day. They may have estimated a flow rate on a 5-foot pipe. The deposit is well able to surpass this. The oil industry has knowledge of the deposit more than they admit. The deposit is 100 miles offshore. They're drilling into the edge of the deposit to leak it down gently to be able to produce from the deposit. The deposit is so large that while I have never heard exact numbers, it was described to me to be either the largest or the second largest oil deposit ever found. It is mostly a natural gas deposit. That's another reason not to blast too willy-nilly there. The natural gas that could be released is really way beyond the oil in quantity. It is like 10,000 times the oil in the deposit. It is this deposit that has me reminding people of what the Shell geologist told me about the deposit. This was the quote. Energy shortage. Hell. We're afraid of running out of air to burn. The deposit is very large. It covers an area offshore something like 25,000 square miles. Natural gas and oil is leaking out of the deposit as far inland as central Alabama and way over into Florida and even over to Louisiana, almost as far as Texas. This is really a massive deposit. Punching holes in the deposit is a really scary event, as we are now seeing. And he goes on and on. He's a software engineer, works for the U.S. Army at Redstone Arsenal, Alabama. Vast experience, including education across a wide area of technical skills and sciences, blah, blah, blah. He's also a founding member of something called the New Energy Conference. And when you read stuff like this, that it could be the event that collapses everything. I mean, I read this stuff and I don't know how in the hell to react to this. I don't know what to do. I don't know. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
stand back, here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Another email here from Tony. I forgot to add one more thing to my last email. Tony writes, do you recall the spot where many consider the area that was responsible for the last great extinction 65 million years ago? Many say that the asteroid that hit the Earth and plunged the dinosaurs into extinction was the Yucatan Peninsula in the Gulf of Mexico. Just something else to dwell on, Tony. Yeah. Oh, Christ. All right, back to, I want to talk with Marge, who's in the hospital, has a birthday tomorrow.
Hey there.
What's this? This is your 92nd, isn't it?
You're getting close. I just wanted to call up my buddies, Mike and Kathy.
Yeah.
And all the truth seekers out at sea and tell them to take their right hand and put it on their left shoulder and their left hand and put it on their right shoulder and give everybody a great big hug. I think that's a good idea to celebrate my birthday. How's that?
To celebrate your birthday. I think it's a great idea. I'm all for it.
And then maybe I can, you know, the doctor was here twice saying he went and looked at my chart. He would have thought that he looked at my chart before it came in, you think?
Probably. Yeah. So what did he say?
Well, I've got a couple of doctors. One wants to operate, one's not so sure I'm ready for it, and like that. So I'm hoping that they make up the cut and pick of mine, because...
Are you yawning?
I beg your pardon. I'll tell you, that nice sort of music that you had in between sort of was reminiscent of Playboy Club, you know. After hours, that's nice.
That is...
Did you ever go there?
No, of course not.
Yeah, right.
I couldn't handle stuff like that, even all those years ago when they still had Playboy clubs.
Sort of the soft tinkling piano.
Yeah.
And the martini glass.
Yeah.
And noodling.
Yeah.
So, like that. But I truly, truly love you guys, and I can never, ever tell you enough how much I do. And appreciate all the cards. So. And those idiots digging in the... You think with as much money as they charge for all that oil, they'd have somebody smart enough to know how to do the damn job.
Well, no kidding.
Is that asking too much?
Apparently it is, Marge. Who was it today? I forget. Somebody said, you know, the usual line, if we can put somebody on the moon, why can't we stop a gusher in the bottom of the ocean? And, of course, that is that's crazy talk, because putting somebody on the surface of the moon is a matter of mostly geometry, whereas stopping this thing in the mantle of the Earth that's under 5,000 feet of seawater is... It has nothing to do with geometry and has everything to do with the core of the Earth, for God's sake. So, there's quite a difference. It's like a non sequitur to compare the two.
Yeah, where's Red Adair when you really need him? Of course, he was doing on top of the ground.
Well, he did on top of the ground, yeah. And his idea was to explode it. And that's what I was just reading a second ago from an engineer, that the idea of exploding something that far down on the floor of the sea carries with it tremendous risk, because what if the explosion goes off at a point, a fracture point, where the rock that makes up the seabed is fractured and this stuff comes gushing out? This seems to me to be a situation that nobody is really telling the truth about. Because it's so horrifying. No, I mean the big truth that this could be the event that completely destroys everything.
Oh, joy.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So I don't know. I'm flummoxed here. I'm not sure what to do.
Back to, they're so damn greedy that they don't care what they do, or how they do it, as long as they get their money. And if they blow up half the Earth in the meanwhile, Well, we got ours. You get your own.
Yeah, but where the hell are they going to spend it, Marge, when the mantle of the earth is cracked? Where are they going to spend it?
They're too damn dumb to care.
Well, oh, man. All right, we got a break coming. I'm going to put you on hold, okay? All right? Marge? Where'd Marge go?
Can you hear me?
Oh, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold, all right?
All right.
Okay, Marge. We got a break coming here. We will be back. So stay with us and your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Eric is in Huntington Beach, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Go ahead. I was going to say, it's going.
Yeah, and we know where. I just wanted to say real quick, one thing that people aren't, you know, focusing on, and I know it's kind of cute to joke about Beyond Petroleum, but it's British Petroleum.
Right.
It is not just an international corporation. It is a foreign corporation owned and controlled majority stake by what is still the titular head of the United Kingdom. And Royal Dutch Shell is royal, and it is Dutch, and it is a shell corporation that is predominantly owned and controlled by another royal family from Europe. And when we start to look at all of this and what's going on, it is irregular warfare. It is economic warfare targeted against us as a republic by many of these nation states that are owned and controlled by foreign and mostly royal powers. You start to look at what's going on in the United States, there's been a great deal of discussion about moving us back into a modern age of feudalism.
Well, let me make sure I understand you. You're not suggesting that that somehow the royal family of the UK or the royal family of Holland has sent commandos over to blow this thing up, are you?
I wouldn't put it past them, but saying that it is a quote-unquote accident, I believe that these individuals, because this is British Petroleum, not American Petroleum, it is not for the largest portion under our control. You've seen how the laws have been changed to basically excuse them to where the cap is, I think, currently it's $10 million, and this goes to the Exxon Valdez. And if you look at Exxon and Alaska and not only, you know, the insane profits that ExxonMobil has made in the last 5 to 10 years during the quote-unquote war, but that British Petroleum and Royal Dutch Shell own the majority stake and controlling interest in our North Slope oil. And when you think about what De Beers does with diamonds and the Rothschilds, who have now divested themselves from gold, have done with gold in taking things off the market to play with market dynamics like supply and demand. You see, Arnold Schwarzenegger came out today and said, we're not going to drill in California.
Well, but and I think he said that not from a standpoint of it's time to move beyond petroleum, but because he's afraid of the same thing happening on the West Coast that happened in the Gulf. Eric, I got to move on. Thanks. I appreciate it. You know, Eric's call, I mean, that brings into focus what I was talking about before the last break. It's hard for me to focus on, no offense to Eric, but it's becoming more and more difficult for me to focus on topics. I don't care who brings them up, whether it's somebody writing the New York Times or somebody calling this program. Let me see if I can complete that sentence now. It's harder and harder for me to focus on anything other than the fact that we seem to be at a nexus of destruction where it concerns this planet. I mean, I can't seem to get away from that. And I don't normally think in apocalyptic terms. I really don't. Because I've always believed that at the last moment, or maybe not the last moment, maybe 20 moments removed from the last one, that we as a species had enough sense to realize what we were doing or the risks that we were taking, and that somewhere 20 clicks back from the last possible moment beyond this point, there's no redemption, we would stop. We'd stop what we're doing. I believed that my entire life. I believed it when I watched all the wars that I experienced in the second half of the 20th century, experienced as a witness, not a participant. When I saw all the environmental destruction, when I saw the craziness in not just our political system, but seemingly every political system, when I saw these intractable, mad, insane conflicts, whether it was in Indonesia or the Middle East or Colombia or Mexico or in this country, you know, all this stuff, I always thought, okay, but, you know, that's kind of, that's kind of the kind of madness that, is not going to crush the human species. It's not going to end life on Earth as we know it, as the expression goes. I always thought that we would have enough sense to not go beyond that point from which there's no return. And here recently being in the past couple, 3 years, I look at what's going on and I think we've gone beyond that point. Or we're so close to going beyond that point. And these weather disasters, sorry about that, this damn cough is just going to kill me, I swear it is. These weather disasters, these ecological disasters, and then something like what has happened in the Gulf of Mexico, are they warning signals or are they the final acts? I don't know. Like I say, it's getting harder and harder to even think about this stuff. Bruce is in Santa Paula, California. Hey, Bruce.
Yeah, good evening, Mike.
Hi.
It's been a while since I've called you. I was listening to your the email that was written by the engineer, and I just wanted to use you, if you don't mind. I have a suggestion, an idea that might work to plug this up. And other people can hear my voice that, you know, by talking to you that wouldn't hear it otherwise. I consider it quite a simple solution, hoping that the drill casing is still intact, if there's still a pipe there. If there's still a pipe, it would not take much engineering to devise a something that would be shaped essentially like a small umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
That would be inserted down into the pipe end first. Well, that's all fine because it would slide down into the pipe, but as soon as you try to pull it back the other way, it locks inside the, you know, it would like try to open and it would lock inside the pipe. And the greater the pressure on the bottom of it, the harder it would dig into the sides of the pipe and the tighter it would try to seal. I don't know if it would work or not. But I just wanted to, to take advantage of the fact that you were discussing it.
Well, it's certainly an idea. The problem here, though, that immediately comes to mind for me is we don't know what's down there.
Right, we don't. I recognize that, but I'm just saying if it's something directly like for example, he was talking about using explosives to try to seal the pipe, and I'm assuming that there still is a pipe intact, and if there is, something, as I said, like you know, you could stick an umbrella in. I mean, of course, that's much longer and not.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. Your concept would you know, certainly has the potential to work,
right.
If.
And that's, I just wanted to say it so that my voice is heard around the globe with, through your program, and hopefully there's some merit to it and somebody can say, hey, wait a minute, maybe we can do something with this. And, if not, oh, well, I wasted a phone call and a few minutes on your dime.
I hear you. All right. Thanks, Bruce. Again, I would imagine the possibilities of stopping this are totally dependent on, once again, not just the configuration that's down there as a result of this blowout, but it's also dependent on physics. Fluid dynamics. I mean, subjects that most of us don't have a clue. We may know, we may be able to say the terms, but we don't have a clue what we're talking about. And it seems to me that the only people that would know, would be the engineers from BP or, engineers who have a chance to see what's really down there. I don't even know how they're seeing. Are they sending, deep, diving, equipment down there? Are they taking, I guess they're taking films of what's going on. But to try to stop this eruption, I mean, when is an effort going to be made? I think here's the part that's scary also. If they're talking about putting a dome over to collect the oil that's gushing out, does that mean they don't know how to stop it? If they're trying to just continue to go back, in a sense, not go back, but in a sense go back to what they were doing, and that is sucking up the oil out of this possibly enormous source under the sea floor, does that mean they don't have a clue as to how to stop it, or they have looked at all the clues and decided there's no way to stop it? I don't know, and I don't know how to find out the answer. We'll be right back. For the hour, back to your phone calls. Susan is in Squim, Washington. I love the name of your town. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Fair to partly cloudy.
I'm not a physicist, and I'm not an engineer, but I am a retired field biologist, and the ramifications of this spill, if they cannot stop it, and if the pool is as large as they believe, and if it just keeps spewing, it will kill the oceans.
Right.
And if it kills the oceans, it will kill us, because that's where all of our oxygen comes from. Everybody thinks it's the trees and the plants, but that's just minuscule compared to all the microscopic diatoms and the formation of our oxygen is in this whole ocean cycle. It's made in the equatorial regions, flows to the polar caps, and is released in, you know, like trillions of times more than any of the plants release on the planet. We'll die. We won't have anything to breathe.
Yeah.
So,
and you know,
these bastards will have killed the entire planet just out of greed.
The horror of this, to me, and here's the real horror, what you've just described and that thing I read from the engineer, that's terror. Here's the horror. The horror is if this is stopped, it's not going to stop the drilling and the continuation of this insane insistence that we use fossil fuels to run this planet.
Oh, Mike, I hope you're so wrong.
Well, I hope too, but what? But if they, but see, if they stop it, Susan, if somehow, through some magic of engineering or science, they manage to cap this or stop it or plug it up or blow it or make it quit, then the oil companies will say, see, we can handle it. We can handle anything. Sorry about the damage. We'll go
but
ahead.
We have to have learned our lesson. We really finally have, this is our last, you know, our last lesson.
Well, we've learned it, but you and I are not BP.
Well,
or ExxonMobil.
We need to nationalize all utilities. I mean, we can't let these people play with their coal mines and their oil wells and their nuclear power plants anymore. We have to stop them. I don't care. I mean, you know, even if we have to go to war over it, we must stop them. We need to stop them. I mean, they're killing us.
Well,
it's very depressing. It's when you read that engineer's report, I thought, oh, words I can't say on the radio.
Yeah.
And I, I'm like you. You know, how in the hell am I going to focus on the bomb in New York and the flood in Tennessee when our planet is cracked in half by these bastards?
Oh, Jesus, you know.
It's a cheery thought.
Yeah, I know. All right, Susan, thanks.
Okay, good night, Mike. Good
night. Appreciate you checking in. This is from Paula. Mike, not to depress you further, and I really feel what you're saying about the overall bad fix we are now in, but we have to consider that BP, still in charge of the disaster, may not share the goals of the rest of us. Your last caller suggested something that would plug the well. Does BP want to keep it flowing? That would make them think of only the options that could allow them to continue obtaining that oil. They would ignore options involving completely plugging the flow as not beneficial to them in the long run. Paula. Yeah, well, that's true. Corporate America, or corporate anything, corporate predatory corporations, which are the lifeblood of capitalism. As a matter of fact, calling a corporation predatory is almost unnecessary repetition. But these massive predatory corporations that define global capitalism are no more interested in ecological balance or the survival of the human race. As a matter of fact, these sons of bitches, to a large extent, would like to see about 80% of the population of the globe removed. Make it a hell of a lot easier for the survivors, and the survivors, in their minds, will be them. But they, you know, predatory capitalism doesn't consider human life. It never has. Human life is a tangential issue. And if it's destroyed, it's collateral damage and the price of doing business and all these little phrases that have crept into our language over the past 30 or 40 or 50 years. It doesn't mean anything. Miners that suffocate and offshore oil rig workers who both burn to death and drown at the same time. And civilians in Afghanistan or soldiers in Iraq who die fiery, horrible deaths. It doesn't mean anything to corporations. They don't care. That's nothing. It doesn't mean anything. It has zero meaning, less than zero. Zero meaning is when they break even on an adventure or a venture, a capitalist venture. Less than zero is when human life is lost. It doesn't matter. It means nothing. And given that reality, and that is a reality of corporatism, capitalism, whatever you want to call it, given that reality, how in the hell do you and I expect these corporations to do anything that would benefit the human race? That's Friday music. What the hell are we playing Friday music for? Let's try to get rid of the Friday music if we can. Is that programmed into the program? I guess it is. You got anything else you can just drop in there? All right, I'll see you all tomorrow night, okay? Are we ready to go? I think we're ready to go. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.